everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kaiju Carnage. I am your host, Cal the Kaiju Guy. So, what's up, everybody? I know it's late, but happy Halloween. I hope you guys had fun in your festivities and whatever else that, you know, you guys did. My Saturday prior to Halloween was pretty dull, pretty boring. Everybody was either busy doing something else or and Emily was at work. And so I pretty much just spent the evening at home with the dogs, watching movies and things like that. I watched a new film of, oh my God, I'm spacing. All Quiet on the Western Front on Netflix. It's a German film and it has British subtitles and British audio. And I watched that evening, and I tell you what, it was an enjoyable film. I really, really liked it. If you're a fan of war films, then I highly recommend it. Go check it out. So that's what I did Saturday, and then Sunday, because Saturday was my brother's birthday, my brother came over, and Emily and I treated him, you know, took him out to eat, and we went to GameStop and, like, found some little figures and some video games and stuff like that. And my buddy Ian, that has guest starred on the show a few times, he came over and we played a game called Blockbuster and Chill, which it was a pretty fun game. I liked it pretty good. And, you know, had a pretty good night. And then Monday, I was working on actual Halloween night. And then got home and, you know, we figured Halloween was pretty well died out. So we didn't even have any candy or anything like that. And nobody came and knocked on our door. So that's all good. That's pretty much how my Halloween weekend went. So I hope you and yours are all safe and accounted for, because I know some things can happen on Halloween, and I hope you guys had a good holiday. But with all of that out of the way, this is my two-day late Halloween special that I'm doing. Last year, I did Ridley Scott's Alien, the original Alien film. Today, I decided to go with a more traditional Halloween-centered film with the 1941 classic, The Wolfman, starring Lon Chaney Jr. Now, I know I'm about to show my age, which, I mean, I guess it really doesn't matter, because according to my statistics, the vast majority of people that listen to this podcast are people my age, so you guys could possibly relate to this. So you guys have heard about my very strict upbringing, being with what I was allowed to watch, and it couldn't be very bloody and all of that kind of stuff. And so everyone pretty much knows the classic film Beethoven that came out in the 90s about the giant St. Bernard dog. I say giant, not kaiju-sized, obviously, but just St. Bernards are massive dogs. And there's a scene in that, and whenever I was watching it for the first time as a kid, that Beethoven goes and gets on the couch or something. I can't remember exactly what he was on, but he steps on the remote and turns on the TV. And it's like a news broadcast or something, and then the guy finishes whatever he was saying, and he wraps it up with, "And now back to the Wolfman." And then that's whenever the parents upstairs are like, "I hear something downstairs," you know, and all that kind of stuff. And we start seeing clips from the movie of The Wolfman. And this was the first time I had ever seen anything concerning The Wolfman, dealing with The Wolfman or anything like that. And the scene that it started on in Beethoven was whenever Larry Talbot, who was played by Lon Chaney Jr., is going through his very first transformation, where the camera is pretty much focused on his feet, and we see the slow transformation with fur being added to his feet, and I'll get to that later on in the episode, how they were able to do these transformations and all of that. And then we see him in full Wolfman form and him wandering through the woods. And by that time, the dad has come downstairs and he turns off the TV. And so, you know, I liked Beethoven. I liked it. It's a good little kids film and all that kind of stuff. But I walked out saying, I don't know what that movie was, The Wolfman, but I want to check it out. I want to see what it is. I want to see what it's about. And it was years later. Like, I was a teenager. I would take a guess and say maybe 13, 14 years old before I finally got to see The Wolfman. And by then, I had already, you know, become a bigger fan of just werewolves in general. For those of you that do not know, werewolves are my favorite, like, folklore, mythical monster, whenever you're talking about things like goblins, ghouls, ghosts, vampires, you know, things like that. The werewolf is my favorite and has always been my favorite. I love werewolf movies. I love reading werewolf books. I have multiple books on, like, the history of, like, werewolf legends and folklore from different cultures and things like that, from places in Europe. There are werewolf stories from places in Africa, and not just werewolf stories, but like were hyenas and things like that in Africa. So, yeah. Okay, so I'm not going to lie to you guys. while I was in the middle of recording, Emily came home, and so I very quickly paused my episode and I dealt with her for a little bit, and she just left again to go meet her mom and her sister. And I came back down to sit back down to finish recording, and I can't remember what my last thought was that I said, even though I know I was talking about, you know, my introduction to the Wolfman and how big of a fan I am of werewolves and stuff like that. So we'll just move on from there. I tried to, like, I hit play on my episode to see if I could go back and hear what my last thought was, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. Because I'm not going to lie, guys, usually I just hit record and just go, you know? Like, I mean, like, it's usually one segment and all that, so that's just how that works. So, all right, so I guess we'll just go on ahead and move on to The Wolfman, 1941. So, again, it stars Lon Chaney Jr. in the main role. Now, Lon Chaney Jr. is the son of Lon Chaney, otherwise known as the Man of a Thousand Faces, and very, very, very well-known actor in silent films and all of that back in, you know, the early 1900s. And so Lon pops up, and he wants to get into acting. He wants to be an actor and all of that, and he starts landing a few roles here and there. But there was one thing about Lon. His Lon Chaney Jr. is his stage name, by the way. His real name is Creighton. Yeah, that's a name, ain't it? Creighton. But there's one thing about him that stands out above pretty much anything else. He is a massive man. The term that was used in show business back in the, like, late 20s to the 40s and all of that was he was hulking. And unfortunately, a lot of times whenever an actor was considered to be hulking, they kind of got typecast and they would end up being stuck playing monster roles. Because they're already this massive individual, so they were just like, we're just going to put some makeup on him, and he's good to go. Worked out very, very well for Mr. Lon Chaney Jr., because he is, you know what? I'm going to talk about that when it comes to legacy. I'm not going to throw that out there right now. But contrary to what a lot of people think, this is actually the second werewolf film that Universal did. There was one that came out in 1935 called The Werewolf of London. Now, this movie was not near as commercially successful or critically successful or anything like that. And I've seen the movie. I'm going to go ahead and let you guys know that I have all of the Wolfman films, like the major, like Universal Monster films and everything. I have a collection of DVDs that I've had for years called the Legacy Collections. And each one is, you know, different, like for its respective Universal Monster, but then there's also a few other little things in there as well that's not really connected to the overall Universal Monsters. For example, like I have the Wolfman Legacy Collection that has the original Wolfman film, and I honestly can't remember what other movie, if there's another Lon Chaney. There is. There's Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. Then there is The Werewolf of London, the film that I'm talking about. And then I think it's called The She-Wolf of London, which was a film about a female werewolf. But, which, by the way, there is a documentary called, like, The Making of a Monster or something like that on the Wolfman Legacy Collection that deals with, like, werewolves and stuff like that in the history of, like, the Wolfman Legacy and all of that stuff on the DVD. So if you can find the Wolfman Legacy Collection, by all means, get it. But you're not going to have the complete Lon Chaney Jr. werewolf collection just by getting this one collection. And again, I'm going to talk about that whenever it comes to Legacy and all of that. So, yeah, there was another film, and it's called The Werewolf of London, and it came out in 1935. Now, it's a werewolf movie. I have not seen it in a good amount of years, to the point to where I honestly can't even remember what my opinion on the film was. But the werewolf is garbage. I'm going to go ahead and say that. It was heavily inspired by the idea / concept of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, to the point that whenever the main character transforms into the werewolf in The Werewolf of London, he still, like, wears clothes. He still has a whole lot of, like, human facial features and all of that kind of stuff, wearing very little fur and all of that. And basically he's a werewolf version of Mr. Hyde. And like to the point to where like after his first transformation, like he transforms into a wolf, like one of the first things he does is he just goes off to the side and grabs his coat, grabs his hat, grabs his walking cane, and out the door he goes. But he's a werewolf, you know? So like, you know, it makes sense that this wasn't super, super well received, because a lot of people could have just viewed it as being a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde ripoff. So, yeah, that movie didn't really go anywhere. And for those of you that just want to know, also, by the way, the Wolfman is considered to be one of the more popular of the Universal Monsters. Usually when people think of the Universal Monsters, like the main ones that there are is the Wolfman, Dracula, Frankenstein, the Mummy, Creature from the Black Lagoon. Those are pretty much the main Universal Monsters that people think of. But there are actually plenty of other Universal Monsters or that are considered to be part of the Universal Monster franchise, in which basically it was in the beginning, it was a Universal Monster if it was done by Universal, and it was a monster movie. So it was pretty much considered to be the Universal Monsters. But nowadays, people just remember like those big five. But there are some lesser known ones, such as the Phantom of the Opera. Believe it or not, the Invisible Man. Pretty much everybody has heard of the Invisible Man, but it is officially considered to be part of the Universal Monsters franchise. So there's that. Now, Boris Karloff, who is a very renowned, iconic actor in the horror genre, he played Frankenstein's monster in the original Frankenstein movie and all of that. Originally, they wanted to make a werewolf movie for him. Like, they wanted him to be, like, the main star and all of that. But while they were trying, you know, they came up with a script and all of that kind of stuff. But the script itself was, it was a little extreme for back in the 30s. Because it was going to feature, like, a boy that was raised in the mountains. He slaughters his family whenever some people come, and or I can't remember how his family gets slaughtered, but they die. He's pretty much the lone survivor of the family. He gets rescued, and upon getting rescued, turns out he's cursed as a werewolf. There was supposed to be a scene of him transforming into a werewolf in a confessional at a Catholic church. And, you know, just the overall mood and theme of it and all that, and with the censorship that, how strict everything was, what you could and could not show in, like, the 30s and 40s and all of that kind of stuff. And also, they didn't want to risk ticking off the Catholic Church. So they were basically like, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. So they went away with it. And eventually, we ended up getting the Wolfman that we know. But the reason Lon Chaney Jr. was cast in the role was because Boris Karloff was busy with another project. So they hired Lon Chaney Jr. And mainly because of his size. Now, I told you guys I was going to talk about the transformation, so here we go. Here's the transformations. So pretty much the transformations for the Wolfman in this older movie, this fantastic movie, this wonderful, my favorite werewolf film of all time movie, because things were very limited with what they were able to work with and all of that kind of stuff, the best way that they could do a transformation was, well, hang on, let me go back. To the Werewolf of London, the way that they did the transformations there is he would, like, there's a scene for one of his transformations where he's walking, and then it's like he walks behind a wall. And then when he emerges from the wall, he's got a little bit more fur over himself. And then he walks behind, like, another some other kind of obstacle, and every time he comes out from behind the obstacle, after being back there for, like, 3 or 4 seconds, they had applied more makeup to him, and then would have him walk out, and they would film it, and he would get behind something else, and that's just how they ended up doing that. They did not want to go that route with the Wolfman. They wanted to actually use good makeup and work on something to make, like, an actual transformation. Even in the original Dracula starring Bela Lugosi, the most iconic Dracula, by the way, how they would do his transformations was they would have, like, a rubber bat, like a fake bat or something like that. The camera would pan away, and then when the camera would come back, Bela would be standing there, basically insinuating they transformed from a bat into Dracula or into a vampire. So they actually wanted to show the transformations in the Wolfman. And how they would end up doing that was a painstakingly long process. Like an unbelievably long process. I have heard, I can't really verify, like, the amounts, because I've heard different amounts, because it's so, you know, things become legend because of how terrible a certain situation was and everything, and so things get exaggerated, but I've heard it took anywhere from every time they went to put the Wolfman makeup on Lon Chaney Jr., it took anywhere from, like, 6 to 12 hours to apply the makeup. And then even after it was applied, after they would be done filming for the day, it would take, like, over an hour to remove the makeup. Now, a lot of people would sit there and be like, oh my God, that sounds terrible. You know, like, let's just say, even best case scenario, 6 hours. 6 hours to apply this makeup. Can you imagine going in and sitting down in a chair and you're basically told, sit still and do not move for the next 6 hours while we apply this makeup onto you? Like, that would be stupid. Like, I mean, that's like, boy, howdy. But anywho, sorry I'm clearing my throat so much, guys. But anywho, The costume overall that he would wear is, like, on his face and all of that, there was a little nose prosthetic that they would put on to give him more of, like, a dog snout a little bit. They didn't want to go with a full snout, and I'll explain that here in a minute. And the prosthetic pretty much began up at the forehead, came down in between the eyes, covered the mouth, and then came down and covered, like, most of, like, the top lip. And if you pay attention whenever you're watching the movie, you can actually see the outline of the prosthetic on his face. Because while the makeup was awesome for its day, it still wasn't perfect. And you can notice things like that whenever you know what you're looking for in these older movies and all of that. And so he had a prosthetic nose. They gave him some fake, like, sharper bottom teeth. And he would wear that while... as the Wolfman. For his hands, he just simply had some gloves. And for his feet, he had... they were basically boots. I don't want to say just rubber boots, but they were boots made of rubber. So what else do you call them? But, and according to Lon Chaney Jr., the boots were extremely uncomfortable. But the hair that he's covered in is actually yak hair. And there are many, many studios that to this day still use yak hair whenever they're applying makeup and things like that. Now, so that would be pretty much his full getup that he would be in all of that. Now, for the actual transformation, what would suck is they would get him in place wherever he needs to be for the scene. This is where you're going to be whenever you go to transform. And what they would do, we'll use the first transformation of the film, where it focuses on his feet, and we see his feet going through the transformation. His feet would basically be placed at a certain spot. And they would say, okay, they would film a little bit of the movie and say, okay, don't move. Then they would start applying makeup. And after they applied some of the makeup, they would say, okay, action. They would film a little bit more. Okay, cut, don't move. They would apply a little bit more makeup. And they would keep doing that over and over and over and over again until eventually they would go through the entire cycle. And then they spliced it all together and it's like, boom, we have a transformation. They did that for his feet, for his hands, for his face. They did it for any of the transformations that they went to do. And you can tell that even though they did tell him to remain still, that's why whenever you watch the movie and you see him, like if the camera is focused on his feet or if it's focused on his face, whenever it's doing the transformation and all that, that's why, like, whenever you see a little bit more fur or something being added to him, his face or his feet or something shifts very, very slightly. Because he did move a little bit. Sometimes they would be in the middle of doing makeup and it'd be like, you know, hey, dude's got to eat. They got to take a lunch break and all that. Just say it took 6 to 12 hours to apply that makeup. You think the poor guy's going to sit there and not have anything to drink or anything to eat, or he's not going to reach up and, like, scratch his temple or something like that? Like, I mean, it's going to happen. And it bled through the movie, but it's okay because it was grade A, state-of-the-art, fantastic special effects for back in 1941. Now, the reason that they, like I said a little while ago, why they went with the prosthetics the way that they did, and they did not want the Wolfman to have, like, a full, very dog feature like face or anything, is because they felt if they covered up his face too much that you wouldn't be able to see emotion or facial expressions from Lon Chaney Jr. So they decided to just put the very small nose and then leave a lot of it just by putting the hair like around his face and all of that, for the most part, leave his face untouched. So that whenever he snarls, whenever he growls, whenever you see every little bit of facial, any type of reaction that he has, you would be able to see it. And I think it was pretty cool that the way that they did that. Like the Wolfman, you know, nope. I'm going to talk about that when it comes to legacy. I'm trying to get ahead of myself. But anywho, So whenever they get ready to start writing this movie, they naturally just abandon the whole thing about the boy in the mountains and all of that kind of stuff. But that film was going to be titled The Wolfman, and that's pretty much the only thing that carried over into this movie was the title, The Wolfman. Now, it was written to be more like a Greek tragedy. They wanted the audience to feel for Lawrence Talbot. They wanted them to feel for him. They wanted him to feel bad, or wanted us to feel bad whenever watching the movie. And boy, like, it works. Lon Chaney Jr. knocks it out of the park whenever he's playing the part of Larry, because he's just... There are certain scenes, like at the beginning, where he's all smiles. He's a very, you know, very handsome looking guy, just like smiling and laughing and joking and living life to the fullest and all that. And then by the time he actually gets cursed, like the whole thing shifts. Like he's very sad. He's depressed. He constantly, like, he dreads every night that's coming because he knows he's going to turn into a wolf, and he's terrified as to what is actually going to happen. So they wanted it to be like a Greek tragedy, and they absolutely, you know, did very, very well with that. Let's go on ahead and talk about the legacy of this film. Whether you know it or not, most, if you're a werewolf fan, most of what you know and like about werewolves comes from this movie, or a byproduct, like one of the sequels of this movie. So basically what I'm talking about is, this is the film that introduced that if you get bitten by a werewolf, you will also inherit the curse of the werewolf and get turned. Like, that was, you know, that's part of this movie. A lesser known thing that's not really used so much today, but there for a while because of this movie, it was a big boom kind of thing. The symbol of the werewolf was a pentagram, a five-pointed star. And a werewolf could see a pentagram in the palm, in the hand of his, or the forehead in some cases, of his next victim. It was called like the mark of the wolf or the mark of the werewolf. And that comes from this movie. The idea, not fully, but somewhat, of silver being the weakness of werewolves can kind of be attributed to this film. Because in this movie in particular, Larry kills, spoiler alert, Larry kills the werewolf that he encounters that bites him and is responsible for passing the curse on to him, kills him by beating it to death with his silver-handled walking cane. And in turn, how the film ends, Larry is killed by his own father fighting him, but he does not know that it's his son that he's fighting, and beats him to death with the same walking cane because it's a silver handle. And in one of the sequels later on, it was given the idea that, like, only silver can kill a werewolf and all of that kind of stuff. And a silver bullet is used to kill Lawrence in one of the other sequels. Now, yes, I know that I just said Lawrence dies in this film and then he dies again in another film. I'm gonna get to that. Just be patient with me if you haven't seen any of them. But anywho, the reason I say it's somewhat attributed to this film is because this film may have popularized it, but there is a tale from way back in the day. It's one of my favorite tales that there is. Some of you guys may have heard of it. It's called The Beast of Givedon. Now, if you don't know what that is, this is based on a true story. There was a large beast that in the 1700s pretty much plagued this little place called Givedon. And it attacked and killed, you know, I'm sure numbers are very heavily exaggerated, hundreds of people and killed them. And there were hunts that were done trying to hunt this thing down, trying to find it, trying to kill it, and all of that kind of stuff. And reportedly, it had been shot numerous times, but it kept, like, coming back. It just would not stay down. And it was not until a hunter shot it with, reportedly, this part of the legend is, you know, not confirmed or anything like that. But reportedly, the beast was shot with a silver bullet. And so that's what put it down. And so that's pretty much where the whole idea of a silver bullet takes down, like, this mythical type beast or whatever came from, was from the Beast of Gévaudan. Which, by the way, it's never been determined what the beast actually was. Because of when it happened, there was no photography or anything like that. There's been numerous paintings and pictures done of it. But it looks like, you know, nobody really knows what it was. There are theories that it could have possibly just been a large wolf. There are theories that maybe somehow it was a hyena, possibly a lion. Those are much less, like, you know, talked about or anything. Chances are it was just an abnormally large wolf of some kind. But yeah, that's pretty much where the idea of shooting something like this with a silver bullet puts it down came from. And the Beast of Gévaudan has gone on to be featured in a few different medias as being a werewolf and all of that. I highly recommend looking up the tale of the Beast of Gévaudan. There's a channel that I like on YouTube called Mythology Unleashed. They've done an episode on the Beast of Gévaudan. You guys know that I'm a metalhead. I like listening to metal and all of that. There is a power metal band from Germany called Powerwolf, and they, one of their more recent songs, it's a single that they released within the last year or so, and it's about the Beast of Gévaudan. So, yeah, definitely check out the Beast of Gévaudan. It's a very interesting, true story and all of that. But, anywho, so those are some of the things that the legacy of this movie is responsible for, that whether you knew it or not, you know, came from this movie. So, or as I said earlier, a byproduct of this movie. So, one of the byproducts of this very first sequel that it had, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, which pretty much ends in a climactic showdown between Frankenstein's monster, played by Bela Lugosi, and the Wolfman, played by Lon Chaney Jr., who reprises his role. Now, the idea that a werewolf transforms on a full moon, it 100% comes from Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. That is how Larry is able to come back to life, because some grave robbers at the very beginning of the movie break into his crypt and allow the light of a full moon to shine on him, and it revives him, basically making it to where werewolves are essentially invincible as long as they've got a full moon to shine on them at some point. And from that point on, it was pretty much like, for the rest of the franchise, it was pretty much known that he would only transform on the night of a full moon, or other, like, three or four nights of a full moon, and all of that. And that would explain why in the first film he transformed, like, maybe three or four nights in a row, or something like that, without ever even mentioning the full moon or anything like that. Now, in the poem that's in the film, it does mention the autumn moon being bright, but it doesn't say anything about it being full. Just throwing that out there. I love Frankenstein versus the Wolfman. It's up there with the original, as far as I'm concerned. It's a very good movie. Now, the next one that comes out is House of Frankenstein, which features the Frankenstein's monster yet again. It's been a while since I've seen them. But now, remember, I told you guys I was going to talk about the Legacy Collections later on. So I own all of the Legacy Collections of the Universal Monsters. Of the Wolfman that I own, if you only get the Wolfman and you think you're going to watch all of the Wolfman movies, you're going to be very disappointed. Because the Legacy Collection that I have, anyway, only has the Wolfman, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, and then the Werewolf of London, then the She-Wolf of London. That's it. In order to get House of Frankenstein, you would have to get the Frankenstein Legacy Collection, because it's part of that. And then the next film is House of Dracula. Same thing. You want that film, you got to get the House of the Dracula Legacy Collection, which has all of the Dracula movies. And then finally, they decided to do another film, which I don't understand, even though it is one of my favorite movies, not just in this franchise, but of all time. They ended it so well in House of Dracula. They gave Larry his happy ending. It seemed like everything was going to be good, said and done, and all of that kind of stuff. And then out comes Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, which features Frankenstein's monster, played by Glenn Strange, Dracula, played by Bela Lugosi, his final performance for a major studio, and his final performance as his infamous Dracula character, and Lon Chaney Jr. returns as the Wolfman, but he's no longer cured. They cured him in the last movie, House of Dracula, and then he pops back up in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, and he's a werewolf again. He's got the curse again, and they never really specified why, like, or what happened, or anything like that. So, you know, I don't know, whatever. But I love the movie. Canonically, they pretty much say that Lon dies at the end of this one, because he dives off of a balcony in a battle with Dracula and grabs Dracula in his bat form, and he falls off into the ocean, like all about around the rocks and all that kind of stuff. But ever since I first saw the movie, I just kind of looked at it and I'm like, I don't know if I buy that. So I like to firmly believe that he's still alive, dadgummit. I don't care what anybody says. Now, amongst those sequels, Lon Chaney Jr. starred in a number of other Universal Monsters, monster films, and all of that kind of stuff. A lot of people do not know, because each monster has like their one big actor that's pretty much known for playing that role. For example, Bela Lugosi, pretty much known as Dracula. Lon Chaney Jr., known as the Wolfman. Boris Karloff is known as both the Mummy and Frankenstein's monster. Lon Chaney Jr. is in a league all on his own that he has played at some point in time or another all four of the major monsters in movies. I can't remember exactly which titles that they are, but there is a movie where he plays Dracula. There's a movie where he plays Frankenstein's monster. There are two films where he plays the Mummy. And of course, he has the Wolfman movies to fall back on, where he is the only actor to have portrayed the Wolfman in its original run. And for those of you that have not picked up what I'm putting down yet, talking about the different legacy collections and all of that kind of stuff, the Universal Monsters were in a shared universe. Like, they would connect with one another and all of that kind of stuff. Like, you know, you had the Wolfman, then Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, which was obviously a crossover with Frankenstein. But then the next one was House of Frankenstein. It's technically considered to be a Frankenstein movie. It's part of the Frankenstein franchise, but it has the Wolfman in it. And it's a continuation of the Wolfman franchise and all of that kind of stuff. So all these people that I've always heard before that were like, oh, everyone's just coming up with shared universes because it was popularized by the MCU and all that. No. Universal had a shared universe, a full shared universe with multiple films and a multiple, like, massive continuity and all of that stuff back in the 30s and 40s. Marvel did not create this. Universal pioneered it. Marvel copied them. Simple as that. Going ahead and beat that myth out of your brain. So, in 2010, there was a remake of The Wolfman. Now, a lot of people badmouth this movie. I know they do. I see the reception. I see its IMDb score. I see the audience reaction on Rotten Tomatoes and all that kind of stuff. I went and saw the movie in theaters because I was a massive fan of The Wolfman and I wanted to go check it out. Guess what? Freaking loved it. I don't care what anybody says. I freaking love it. I've got the novelization to the movie. I've read it. Freaking love it. Like, I don't care. I'll go to war with anybody over the 2010 Wolfman. It's a good movie, and also it stars the very lovely Emily Blunt. So you can't really, I mean, you can't go wrong with that. So, yeah. So that's pretty much the legacy of this movie. One last thing I'm going to share about Mr. Lon Chaney Jr. is he was difficult to work with on set because he basically had two different versions of himself. There was the normal version of himself that a lot of people got to see and meet, and the most used way to describe him was sweet. He's very sweet. He would be very nice. He would be very polite. He would stand up for new actors. He had mad respect for some of the older actors and things like that. There is a, I don't know how true it is, but there is a story that there was an older actor that was going to be on the same movie with Lon Chaney Jr. and he was the main character. Lon was going to be the main character of the film. And since this other guy, the veteran actor, was just, you know, he was just going to be an extra or just have like a cameo appearance. They did not have him a chair, like his own chair. And when Lon found out about it, he said, "You either get that man a chair or I'm walking off of this picture." Like, that's how much he had the back of like the older veteran actors and all of that kind of stuff. But so he was a real good guy, real sweet guy and all of that kind of stuff. But unfortunately, like what happens to so many people out there, he was a massive alcoholic, and he drank very, very heavily, to the point to where not only did he play a universal monster in The Wolfman, he was known throughout Hollywood, as well as one of his drinking buddies, as the real-life universal monsters, because they would drink so much and go out and cause so much mischief and all that kind of stuff that, like, property would get destroyed, there would be bloodshed. Like, I mean, it would be pretty rough. His own co-star in The Wolfman, Evelyn Ankers, that played Gwen in the film, Lon Chaney Jr.'s, or Larry's love interest in the film, would openly state that she had a terrible time working with him on the film because he got drunk one night and Universal wanted to punish him. So he was in a dressing room on the back lot. And it was a very big dressing room from what I gather. But whenever she came up, in order to punish him, they took him out of the dressing room and gave it to her. And he viewed it as she just came in and was trying to upstage him because he's supposed to be the star of the film and all of that kind of stuff. And so he would play like very petty, childish pranks on her. He would constantly come up behind her, dressed in like full Wolfman makeup and purposely scare her and would cause her to like drop her food and all of that kind of stuff. Her last name is Ankers, and he would call her Shanker. Now, that may not sound too bad to you guys, but pretty much everyone knows what a shank is. It's a homemade weapon that's usually, you know, you could turn, you know, like a toothbrush, and you could sharpen a toothbrush and make it into a shank. To be referred to as a shanker is the equivalent of being called a backstabber. And so that's basically what he was calling her. And they did not get along well on set, but you honestly cannot tell with the movie because their on-screen chemistry is amazing, and she's just lovely in this film. So, all right, guys, that pretty much does it for my Halloween special on my favorite werewolf film of all time, The Wolfman from 1941. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. And again, I'm sorry that it's late, but, you know, I just didn't want to. I'm already doing the Wednesday episodes and the Saturday episodes. I didn't want to throw in a third episode and all of that kind of stuff. So because I knew that this was going to be kind of a longer one because I love this movie so much and I want to talk about it in as much detail as I could. If you've never seen it, or if it's been a while since you've seen it, by all means, go watch it. Like, it's one, like, I love The Wolfman. Guys, I freaking love The Wolfman. So, all right, guys, again, thank you. You guys are the best. Sending all the love. And You know, we're officially in November. The holidays are around the corner. Thanksgiving is coming up. Christmas is coming up. But also throughout the world are quite a few pagan holidays that are being celebrated and all of that kind of stuff. So that's why when a lot of people say happy holidays, it's simply because they don't know which religion you are or what doctrine you are and which holidays that you celebrate and all of that kind of stuff. So if you have any big celebrations coming up in September, happy holidays to you and all of that. I hope, you know, everyone's going to stay safe. A lot of bad things tend to happen in November and December just because it is the holidays. Everyone's in a rush. Everyone's in a hurry. I encourage everyone to just, at the end of the day, guys, if you're Christmas shopping or something like that, it's just a present. There's no need to stick your neck out or get flustered or, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up. Black Friday deals are going to be going on. You know, don't be a not nice word to people in stores and all of that kind of stuff. I know plenty of friends that work retail and everything. You guys have no idea how you think that you're being firm and all of that kind of stuff. A lot of times it's like you become a joke to them. Like, as soon as you leave, like, everybody starts laughing and joking and all that kind of stuff. You really don't carry the weight that you think that you do. And I'm not saying that any of my listeners are like that, but I'm just throwing it out there. So November and December, holidays, be safe and all of that kind of stuff. This Saturday, in just a few days, do not look for my episode to release early Saturday morning, because I've already told you guys that this Saturday is going to be me, Kid Kong, and his daughter Amberly talking about Godzilla vs. Kong. I'm going over to his house and we're going to record. She's super excited about it. She's very pumped about it. She can't wait to talk and all of that kind of stuff. I can't remember her exact age. She's either 8 or 9, but she's very, very pumped and all of that kind of stuff. And we're going to talk about her favorite kaiju and what, how she got into kaiju, who her favorite kaiju is. It's Kong, by the way, just throwing that out there because she's a smart kid. And, yeah, so we're going to have a lot of fun with that one. I'm looking forward to it. And it'll be posted as soon as it's recorded. But, you know, I've got to go over there. It's because of his work schedule and all of that kind of stuff. I've got to be able to get over there. And all three of us got to sit down and record the episode. So, all right, guys. Check me out on all of my social medias. On Facebook, I'm Kaiju Carnage, Godzilla / King Kong Podcast. And I have a Godzilla Ultima fan page. And then on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, I am Cal the Kaiju Guy. So, as always, thanks for all the love. Thanks for all the support. You guys are the best. We'll catch you next time. This is Cal the Kaiju Guy, signing out.